Good morning. Counsel for appellant, we're ready to begin when you are.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court, counsel. My name is Shelley Rohr, and I represent the appellant cross-respondent in this matter, Angela Charlson. And first, Your Honors, this case has been in litigation since 2012, and the amount of information that I would like to impart to this court is simply not possible. Therefore, I will primarily focus on the issue of the trial court's failure to implement the South Dakota decision in this matter, and that is the result of a miscarriage of justice that occurred in this case.
That's the first issue, sort of that amalgam of arguments.
Correct, Your Honor. The Minnesota trial court essentially failed to do three things. The first thing, the court in part disregarded the terms of the party's antenuptial contract as determined and interpreted by the South Dakota decision. And for the court's reference, it is called a pre-marriage agreement in South Dakota. Second, the trial court erred when it failed to follow the South Dakota Supreme Court's directive in Charlson v. Charlson that the Minnesota court will apply the South Dakota court's interpretation of the antenuptial contract. And the third issue is the Minnesota trial court inserted its own sense of equity regarding the value of the appellant's non-marital assets in two entities. The result of these actions, Your Honors, by the Minnesota court violated Article 4, Section 1 of the United States Constitution, known as the Full Faith and Credit Clause, and also the Minnesota Uniform Foreign Judgment Act.
Let me ask this before you get too far there. Doesn't this all boil down to the date of valuation?
I believe, Your Honor, that it does. I think that is part of it, a big part of the issue here.
And the issue, as I see it, is that if you use a percentage, it's different than if you use a dollar amount.
If you're talking about the valuation date and what happened after the valuation date, well, Your Honor, I think what we have to look at is that the antenuptial agreement was interpreted by a South Dakota judge after 9 days of trial on interpretation. And if you look at the South Dakota decision, the conclusions of law are very, very consistent that says the court finds the value of the non-marital assets and then gives a dollar value.
Isn't that, just looking at this Sioux Falls massage envy, that seems to be the largest item, and so I've kind of focused my attention there. The value of $1,220,000 was a stipulated value at the circuit court level, was it not?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay, and at that time, appellant was saying that's my property, that's my business. Correct?
That is not correct, Your Honor. At the time of the South Dakota proceedings, what had happened, we tried the interpretation phase in 2015. What had happened after the valuation date of December of 2013, the respondent and his minority shareholders amended the buy-sell agreement, which prevented the appellant from ever being awarded that business.
I agree with that. I understand that. But her testimony was that she considered that to be her property.
She thought that it was her property. Right. That is correct.
And again, we're working with a stipulated value, right?
Correct.
You agree that, and then it goes up to the Supreme Court in South Dakota, and the Supreme Court affirms. And you agree, I think, or everybody agrees, that there isn't currently an asset worth $1,220,000, right?
Well, we don't know.
Well, should we remand to the district court with instructions to award your client the Sioux Falls Massage Envy at $1,220,000?
Well, the reason you can't do that, Your Honor, is a couple of things. Not only the amended buy-sell agreement, but the franchise restrictions prevent such an award. And what happens is that after the valuation date here, everything is post-marital efforts. The parties were divorced in February of 2014. So like any case, and we cited the Allam case in our brief, is that if you go back and remand and do an entire trial on the issue of valuation of all the assets, that's too far removed from the divorce date. And in this case, the respondent has had complete control over that business him and the minority shareholders. So we don't have any idea what's going on with the business, you know, after the evaluation date, other than the testimony that we heard for the first time at trial from the Massage Envy representative that we had objected to as to relevancy, and the court allowed that testimony anyway and seemed to rely on it. What happened here, Your Honor, is that 3 days before we started our trial, the respondent had come to the court at the pretrial and argued to change the valuation date as to three assets, one being SFME. The trial court issues a judicial directive saying the valuation date for SFME shall remain December 31, 2013. Then the trial court goes on, and it's throughout, the Minnesota trial court, excuse me, goes on to say repeatedly through its findings that it's going to incorporate the South Dakota decision and its valuation dates. And that's in finding of fact 34. Then what happens is the trial court contradicts itself, goes on to make a finding, fact 135, and then finds that it's not going to be equitable to award the appellant her non-marital assets. So the findings are so contradictory to one another that it just doesn't make any sense. It's against the logic and facts on the record here. It's undoubtedly, Your Honors, the valuation of those assets probably changed after 2013. That happens in almost every divorce case that we have.
Well, that was part of my question about the South Dakota proceedings. The South Dakota court didn't even decide value. It accepted a stipulation of value and then applied what happened before that to figure out, given that stipulated value, what percentage of that belongs to each of them.
Right. What happened in South Dakota is that there was a stipulation values as to various business interests, and then we also tried the value on a couple of other business interests.
But not on Sioux Falls
Massage Envy. Not on Sioux Falls Massage Envy.
It really isn't a judicial determination of what it was worth on December 31st of 2013, whatever the date is.
Well, Your Honors, I respectfully disagree with that, because when you look at the South Dakota decision as affirmed by the Supreme Court in that state, it says that this court's interpretation of the antenuptial agreement will govern, and the Supreme Court also says the Minnesota trial court shall implement this interpretation in the Minnesota divorce case. So the business valuations that were...
Both the circuit court opinion and the Supreme Court opinion, as I recall it, and I'm not going to look it up right this minute, say that the awarding and the division of the property remains for the Minnesota court to determine.
As to the marital property.
Correct.
We're talking only the appellant's non-marital property.
Correct.
Those issues are res judicata because they were decided by another jurisdiction. So the value of the appellant's non-marital property is res judicata, as it was decided by another jurisdiction, and the Minnesota court's job was to take that decision, implement it into the Minnesota decision, but the court maintained its equitable powers to divide the marital property under Minnesota statute section 518.58 subdivision 1. It's our position that they did not have the authority to, number one, change the valuation dates that the parties agreed to and stipulated to in the South Dakota proceedings. The valuation dates, we are arguing, are also res judicata under that those decisions.
What you're asking us to do is apply the monetary value, not a percentage.
Correct. Because if you look at the South Dakota opinion, it's all a dollar amount in the conclusions of law. And I think the one thing that this court did overlook, the Minnesota court, is the judgment and order from South Dakota of June 27, 2016, which was our trial exhibit 105. It was also filed as a foreign judgment as well. And it states, it is ordered, adjudged, and decreed that the value of said assets shall be set as set forth in the court's findings and conclusions. The other thing that's important to remember, Your Honor, is that the contract terms of the antenuptial agreement, which this court, the Minnesota Supreme Court, has said those antenuptial contracts have the same constitutional protections as any other contract, and people are free to alter their rights when they enter into an antenuptial agreement, which is what they did in this case. And the antenuptial contract in this case specifically says it was the party's intent to protect separate property regardless of any act by the other spouse. The South Dakota Supreme Court also opined that one party's use of separate funds to acquire a marital asset does not mean that that person relinquished her separate property in the asset. That is the contract terms. So to answer your question, yes, it was the dollar values that controlled in the conclusions of law, and Judge Day's order from South Dakota is very, very specific. His conclusions of law 54 in the South Dakota decision set forth all the dollar values. The percentages that were used in the findings in that case is merely the methodology. And a methodology is a mathematical calculation that is used to arrive at a dollar amount when we do non-marital tracing. And that's done in every single case, Your Honors, in the dissolution realm. We use a percentage of our methodology to arrive at a dollar amount for the value of assets, whether it's a marital asset or a non-marital asset. So, Your Honor, it is our position that in this case, the Minnesota Trial Court was not sitting as a court of equity as it related to the value of the non-marital property of appellant. Its job was to enforce that foreign judgment, which it did not do, and that was error. We are requesting that this court reverse the trial court's decision and direct the trial court to award appellant the value of her non-marital funds in SFME and the other entity, ME Rogers. Those are the only two assets that the court did a percentage value on. All the other assets, which I believe there were about 36 other assets, the court used a dollar value and did, in fact, follow the South Dakota decision on those values. It was only carved out an exception on these two business entities. Next, Your Honors, the appellant also contends that the Minnesota Trial Court abused its discretion by failing to require the respondent to be responsible for all or at least more of a portion of the financial receiver fees. A financial receiver was appointed in 2015 to oversee compliance with a temporary order. And the receiver was paid from a party's joint account of which the appellant had substantial non-marital funds in those accounts. The financial receiver issued a written report and testified at trial that respondent had violated the terms of the temporary order 56 times, including putting distributions, business distributions, into his own account and not the joint account. And that fact was not disputed at trial. The receiver acknowledged his work was time-consuming, and even the respondent acknowledged at trial that he made mistakes and that those mistakes caused extra work. The trial court made only 8 findings of fact on this, and we believe that the trial court ignored the facts and overlooked the respondent's behavior on that issue. And the last issue, Your Honor, is that we also submit that the trial court abused its discretion by failing to award conduct-based fees to the appellant. The appellant's post-trial submissions provided 35 detailed findings of fact regarding conduct-based fees. Her memorandum of law regarding fees was 20 pages in length on attorney fees and citations back to the record and the evidence in this case. Yet the Minnesota Trial Court made 4 findings of fact on that issue. And as we all know, in the temporary orders in this case, many fees were reserved and others were denied, but temporary orders are not appealable. And there was no findings to explain why the respondent's conduct as raised by the appellant was acceptable. And we believe and we are asking that this court reverse and remand the issues on the receiver fees and the attorney fees.
It's an immense record, and what I'm about to ask you, I expect you may not be able to tell me immediately, but where is the order in the record about valuation? Is the original order in the record about the valuation date?
The original order is in the South Dakota trial exhibits and on the stipulation of the values. That's where the original stipulation came in at, so it is in that, and I could probably find that site.
Maybe you could on rebuttal, if you can find it, but there's like 20,000 pages here, so I know I'm asking for needles out of haystacks, but I'm kind of a little bit interested in finding that, and if you can help me do that, that'd be great.
The one thing I can direct the court to is our addendum, is the Notice of Judicial Directive of August 18, 2006.
That was the later one, though.
That was the one from Minnesota, yes.
That's what piques my interest to look back and find the original one, if you can tell me.
Yes, I will do that.
But
thank you.
At this instant.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Rohrer. Counsel for respondent.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Amber Lawrence, and I am here on behalf of the respondent and cross-appellant Donald Charlson. On behalf of the respondent, I submit that the district court abused its discretion when it awarded appellant the gains and the losses on the respondent's retirement account some 4.5 years after the date of valuation.
Isn't that argument sort of the same as the argument being made, except the reverse side, by the appellant?
No, Your Honor.
Why not?
It is not because, are you referring to Sioux Falls Massage Envy,
right.
the valuation change?
You want that asset as of the valuation date as well, correct?
Sioux Falls Massage Envy?
The 401, the retirement plan.
Correct, Your Honor.
The Edward Jones.
Nobody's disputing that as of December 31st, 2013, Sioux Falls Massage Envy was valued at $1.2 million. The difference is that neither party is being awarded that asset and the asset's being sold. So in that context, the appellant is somehow asking the respondent to bear the burden of her 92% interest in this store, even though he's not taking the asset. So the difference is with the profit and loss, with regard to the retirement account, the value is the value. Throughout the pendency of the proceedings, the district court was steadfast in the December 31st, 2013 date of valuation. As of that date, respondent or appellant would be entitled to $405,000 some odd dollars from the respondent's retirement account. To award her the gains and the losses on those funds would be the equivalent of updating the value through 2019 when the funds were distributed. So we see those as two very distinguishable issues, Your Honor.
I mean, the appellant argues that Sioux Falls Massage Envy is worth $1,220,000. That was determined by the South Dakota courts, affirmed by the Supreme Court. Valuation date is that date. That's their argument, too.
That is the value as of December 31st, 2013, Your Honor. If the appellant wants to be awarded that asset at that value, she's more than entitled to have that award.
No one seems to want it at that value.
Because everyone knows it's not worth that. The appellant cites to the fact that the buy-sell, in her mind, restricts the transfer of the Sioux Falls Massage Envy store to her. There's no evidence in the record other than her own testimony to support that claim. She further states that the franchise agreement prevents the award of the franchise being transferred to her. There's no evidence in the record to support that claim other than her own testimony. And if you look back at the record, the appellant was, in fact, able to start a franchise in Rapid City. They started RCM, a corporation, to run the franchise, the Massage Envy franchise, they intended to open in Rapid City. The problem was that Rapid City wasn't an area that was ready for Massage Envy at the time. So for appellant to now claim that she's not able to be awarded some franchise and that prevents Sioux Falls Massage Envy from being transferred to her is simply erroneous.
I didn't mean to get too far out. You wanted to talk about the 401k. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I got off a little track with you,
yes.
Your Honor. With regard to the 401k, the respondent is asking that the date of valuation be used or that the issue be remanded to the district court for all assets to be updated. It is the equivalent of updating the value of the 401k through 2019. The respondent did request that certain assets be updated. The judicial directive denied that request. Therefore, it was an abuse of discretion for the court to award the gains and losses on the retirement account. With regard to Sioux Falls Massage Envy, the district court did give full faith and credit to the South Dakota decision with regard to Sioux Falls Massage Envy and Rogers Massage Envy. I'll use those somewhat interchangeably because they were treated the same at the district court level. Under the full faith and credit clause, the Minnesota court must recognize and enforce final judgments from other states. What this boils down to is not a date evaluation, as Your Honor suggested, but instead whether the district court's use of a percentage somehow violated the full faith and credit clause of the Supreme Court or of the Constitution, and it did not. The South Dakota trial was expert-driven. Appellants' experts, Value Consulting Group, spent considerable time defending their tracing report and their methodologies used in their reports. The South Dakota court adopted the VCG reports. There were two separate reports in their entirety. The Minnesota court did the same. When detailing their methodologies, the appellant's experts specifically testified that appellant's separate property interest in various assets are treated as a percentage in each asset value. Each and every schedule in the VCG tracing report provides a separate property percentage for appellant as well as a dollar figure. Throughout the 192-page decision from South Dakota, the court utilizes a percentage and a dollar figure interchangeably when dealing with the appellant's separate property interest. There are at least 11 different findings cited in respondent's brief where the South Dakota court specifically found that appellant has an 83.9% separate property interest in Sioux Falls Massage Envy and a 19.2% separate property interest in Rogers Massage Envy. At the time of the South Dakota trial, 2 years after appellant had had any contact with the store, she was steadfast and emphatically testified that that store was meant to be hers, that she had the history as a businesswoman, that she had the history and the expertise as a franchise owner, and that Sioux Falls Massage Envy and all the Massage Envies were always meant to be her store, that the respondent was a financial investor, that he had his job, and that her job was running these stores. This was 2 years after she had had any contact, as she had been prohibited from entering the store. Yet at the time, the store was able to sustain distributions of $24,000 a month for the 75% shareholder interest that these parties owned. Fast forward 2 years later, the store was not able to support that level of distribution, and appellant no longer wants the store. If you look at the Minnesota trial court's finding of fact 146, the court specifically found that the timing of her change is suspect. Regardless, neither party wanted the store, and the district court, in its discretion, properly ordered the store to be sold. And in adopting the South Dakota court's decision, it ordered that 83.9% of the proceeds of the sale be awarded to appellant as her separate property. She is then entitled to another 8% of the marital interest of the sale proceeds. So essentially, she owns 92% of the store but wants respondent to bear the burden of the sale and the payment to her should there be a shortfall. She owns 92% of the store. This is her asset. If anything, it should be awarded to her. And if it's sold, the court properly ordered that she be awarded 83.9% of the separate property and 8% for her marital interest.
Who is operating the store in South Dakota in Sioux Falls?
Who is operating the store? It's run by, there's a manager there and different business people that run the store. My client's an investor at Edward Jones in Rochester, Minnesota. He does oversee somewhat of the financials of the store, but he doesn't run the day-to-day operations of the store. And if you look at the transcript from South Dakota, appellant testified to that very clearly, that Mr. Charlson, the respondent, is an investor, that he doesn't run the store. Yet at the same time, she then wants to hold him accountable.
Who's hiring and firing the managers?
I don't have that information, Your Honor. I believe that the record does support that the respondent's daughter was the manager of the store during its most successful years during the trial phase. I'm not sure who was managing the store during the trial in Minnesota.
(Clears throat)
The respondent is requesting that this court uphold the district court's decision with regard to awarding the appellant her 83.9% interest in the sale proceeds of Sioux Falls Massage NV. The only alternative would be for this store to be awarded to her and she pay my client the 8% marital interest that he's entitled to at the $1.2 million value from December 31st, 2013.
But apparently that there's some suggestion that that's not possible anymore because of intervening events.
There's a suggestion by appellant that the buy-sell agreement prevents that, but the testimony at the trial court was to the contrary. And the franchise agreement also does not restrict a transfer to appellant. Appellant.
Did the district court make a finding on that, or are we just left with two different versions of whether it can be sold?
The district court did not make a finding. The district court simply recited appellant's claim that she can't be awarded it, but didn't make a finding on either. The district court did not make a finding, and I can only assume.
We would have to remand to figure out what's the deal with the buy-sells.
Correct, if the court wanted to have that answer. I believe that the district court didn't make a finding on that because the court ordered it to be sold.
What data did the district court in Minnesota use as the date of valuation?
For Sioux Falls Massage Envy? Or for?
For all the assets.
December 31st, 2013.
December 31st, 2013?
Correct.
Okay. And was that by stipulation?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And do you know where that order is, the original one?
I do not, Your Honor. Respondent also.
Let me ask one more thing. If you use a percentage, do you not decrease the valuation of the Sioux Falls store?
With the store being sold, it depends what the store is sold for. It could increase the value as well. If the store sells for more than $1.2 million.
But if the date of valuation is as of December 31st, 2013, that valuation was to $1.2 million, right?
The stipulated value for Sioux Falls Massage Envy as of that date was $1.2 million, correct.
So why wouldn't you use that date or that value if you're using December 31st, 2013 as the date of valuation?
If the store were being awarded to one party or the other, I would agree that that would be the appropriate value to use. However, the store is being sold. So then it begs the question as to who should make up that shortfall. Should it be on the respondent to bear that burden, or should it be the appellant? There's no evidence to support that the respondent should bear the burden of making up some shortfall for what this store sells and what it was valued at in December 31st, 2013. And in fact, with appellant owning 92% of it, this is her store. Perhaps she should be making up the value and paying the respondent his 8% marital interest with regard to whatever it sells at. Respondent did seek to update the value of three assets at the trial court level, the Homestead, Buffalo Wild Wings, and Sioux Falls Massage Envy. Despite the court's denial of that request, appellant is here arguing that she was somehow denied due process because respondent made that effort. Appellant was not denied due process. The district court utilized the December 31st, 2013 valuation date for all of the assets. Appellant then goes on to claim that the district court denied her due process because it allowed the testimony of Scott Hubert. With all due respect, it appears that appellant is speaking out of both sides of her mouth. On one hand, she's saying it's not relevant, but on the other hand, she's saying that respondent somehow violated his fiduciary duty to her because of the decreased profitability and value of Sioux Falls Massage Envy. The relevancy of Scott Hubert's testimony was to provide context as to why the value had decreased and why the store was less profitable. The district court found his testimony to be credible, as well as the rationale for the decrease in profits and value of the Sioux Falls Massage Envy store. The district court did not deny appellant due process, and it appropriately found that the respondent did not violate any fiduciary duty and did not divert any funds from Sioux Falls Massage Envy away from the appellant. With regard to the fees, the court's decision on to award or deny attorney fees will not be overturned on appeal absent a clear abuse of discretion. When seeking an award of conduct-based attorney's fees, the appellant has the burden of showing that the respondent's conduct unnecessarily contributed to the length and the expense of the proceedings. The district court denied both parties' requests for attorney's fees, as well as both parties' requests for the other to be financially responsible for the neutral financial, the receiver's fees. Appellant makes her claims with unclean hands. She came in here into the district court and violated the temporary order over and over again with regard to the receiver fees. She utilized the joint 7183 account to pay her Quick Trip card, to pay many different expenses on a monthly basis, thereby increasing the work for the financial receiver. Respondent provided that information to the court. The court denied his request to have appellant pay a larger portion of those fees. The same with the attorney's fees. The district court found that, the district court also very clearly ordered that neither party submit any request for attorney's fees from the South Dakota trial, including the tracing report. Despite that clear directive, appellant sought and requested respondent to pay her attorney's fees from South Dakota, including the VCG tracing report. The Minnesota court found that each party made colorable claims during the trial and that each party unnecessarily contributed to the length and the expense of the proceeding, therefore thereby offsetting any award of attorney's fees from either party. The court did not abuse its discretion with regard to its denial of fees, and we ask that that be upheld. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lawrence.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'm briefly just going to start with the 401k issue. I won't take much of the court's time on that. Appellant had requested an equal division of the marital portion of the pre-tax retirement assets as of December 31, 2013, subject to market gains or losses. Both financial experts testified that it is common practice to divide pre-tax retirement accounts equally as it neutralizes the tax impact to the parties. And the Minnesota court made finding of fact 96 on that to support its decision. So while transfers incident to a divorce are not taxable, the withdrawal of those funds are, and both of these parties are in their early 60s and therefore able to draw on the funds. So therefore, under the Thomas case and subsequent cases, it's appropriate to compensate a party if the property award is deferred. And Your Honors, I was reviewing some case law this morning, and I see that Justice Hallbrooks, you just had a decision come down in the Wiggins case, Wiggins v. Wiggins, and Judge Hooten wrote the opinion, which is squarely on point in this case on the 401k gains and loss issue. Now, to answer...
Is that published or unpublished?
That's an unpublished decision, and the court issued that decision on October 15th of 2018.
Thank you.
And to answer Your Honor's question on the valuation, I could not find the site to the exhibit that went in at the South Dakota case, but I could find it in the supplemental judgment and decree in this case. It's found on page 23. And the findings of facts are found in a finding of fact 103, 104, and finding of fact 105 says the parties agree to the values of the following business interests, and then it lists Sioux Falls Misogyny.
Those are in the judgment and decree.
This is in the judgment and decree, but it also says it's relying on the South Dakota Circuit Court's stipulated values. And I'm sorry, I didn't
really know if there's an order in Minnesota from before the judgment and decree that says that.
On the valuation date? Oh, yes, Your Honors. Yes, that was done at the time the, I misunderstood.
That's what I'm looking for.
Yes, the valuation date, and that was set right after the party's divorce was bifurcated in 2014. I believe the court order is March of 2014. So I'm sorry I don't have that specific date.
All right, we'll find it.
So in this case, Your Honors, I already went through what a methodology is, and the respondent continues to argue the percentages, which is inaccurate. It's the conclusions of law that control. And in this case, in the South Dakota decision, it is replete with the reference to the word value in this case. And I'm not going to go over that again. But Respondent misspeaks when she said that appellant owns Sioux Falls Massage Envy. She is not an owner. She has a marital and a non-marital interest.
In his name because he's a veteran.
Yes, it has always been in his name, and the minority shareholders are friends of his. My client has never been an owner of SFME. Respondent is incorrect. The franchise agreement was a trial exhibit in this case, and the Massage Envy franchise agreement specifically states that transfers cannot occur. The respondent was also inaccurate. My client has never been approved as a franchisee for Massage Envy. The trial court, I believe, was inaccurate in that. They relied on the respondent's testimony, but my client has never been a franchisee, and she testifies she's never been qualified to get the franchise in this case. The respondent was also inaccurate on the amended buy-sell agreement. The amended buy-sell agreement is part of not only the South Dakota proceedings, it was also part of the Minnesota proceedings. And Judge Day in South Dakota made specific and lengthy, very lengthy findings on the amended buy-sell agreement and why the appellant could not be awarded that business. And I'd ask the court to review that as well. And as far as we're concerned, Your Honor, let's just assume that SFME, whether it's a higher or a lower value, the res judicata issue is whatever her non-marital is, that is the number. So if the business is higher, she doesn't get the benefit of that because the court found the value of her non-marital asset as of the valuation date. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. We appreciate your arguments. There's a lengthy record, and the focus you both provided in your argument was very helpful. Thank you very much. Matter's been submitted. We have a break.